Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in here to MyW Sports Sports Monday, another edition of the MyW Sports Sports Recap of the Week. Kyle Westcott, Luis Sanchez, proud to join. Kyle, I'm proud to have you join me this evening. A lot to get to. We had a very busy week in sports. A lot to get to, including the NCAAs, NCAA basketball, NCAA hockey. We had the NWHL Isabel Cup this weekend. Some WTA and LPGA action as well. So a lot to get to, Kyle. What was something that stuck out to you this week? I mean, we had a lot to pick from, but what was something that you're really excited to talk about? Did I lose you there, Kyle?
And so we're going to start the show tonight. Tonight we're going to start with an outtake. I hit the mute button and did not unmute it. I pulled what is called a Luis Sanchez. I hit the mute. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're good. You're good.
I am totally pumped that it is the first day of spring, but we still have so much winter to finish up and finalize here as we finish up both, the professional hockey league that was still playing and the NCAA hockey as well. So I'm pumped to talk about both of those two things, but obviously the one I'm most pumped to talk about would be the shock of the century.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of hockey to get to, and we'll get right into that. But Kyle, let's first swing it over to you for the fun fact of the week.
Sure, the fun fact of the week. Luis, do you know where Yolanda Griffith is?
No, I don't actually, Kyle. Why don't you inform us?
Well, here's the great thing is she never really went away. The great WNBA player, 11-year career, 7-time All-Star, also the league MVP in 1999 with the Sacramento Monarchs, led the Monarchs also to a WNBA title in 2005. If you missed it, she was sitting on the bench for the University of Albany Great Danes facing the UConn Huskies just this past weekend. She's an assistant coach to Coach Mack down at UAlbany, and it was great to see her on the bench and imparting her wisdom to the Great Danes down there at Albany.
That's actually really awesome. Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, but did she play for Long Beach in her first year in the WNBA? Remember the Stingrays? Do you remember the Stingrays?
I don't remember the Stingrays.
No.
I thought she was drafted by the Monarchs, but maybe not.
Maybe you're right. We'll fact check that before the end
definitely.
Yeah, we'll definitely fact check it. Actually, you know, I think we got it up right now. It's definitely 1999 first round pick, second overall to the Sacramento Monarchs. She played for the Long Beach Stingrays, which is, I guess, another team in Chicago, the Chicago Condors, before joining the WNBA. So, all right, fun fact. There you go.
There you go. That was a very well-rounded fun fact.
We do our best here. We do our best. All right, Kyle. So we have a lot to get to around the leagues. We're going to talk about some pro fast pitch. We're going to talk about some football. NWSL is going on right now. So those are some things we'll get to a little later. And if we don't, please check out the updates on mywsports.com. But, Kyle, let's get right into the NWHL. Shocker. I mean – Shocker, but we can't spoil it yet. Let's first talk about the semifinals because our fans deserve to know about these semifinal matchups that led to this amazing game that happened last night at the Songhees Center in Lowell. Let's talk about Connecticut and Boston. This game, a lot of people going in didn't really know what to expect. Connecticut wasn't really finishing the season out strong. They had lost to Buffalo to lose out that 3 seed, but Boston, we knew what they were bringing to the table. Boston scores 8 goals in this matchup, Kyle. I mean, 2-0 already with Carpenter in the first 5 minutes. Then Bender gives them a 3-0 lead. You have a 5-1 lead after two. I mean, Boston just didn't let up.
No, you're right. And, you know, afterwards we talked to a few of the Pride players and Knight specifically and Carpenter as well said, you know, that they felt great that they really put together a full 60 minutes that night. And you saw that with, as you said, Carpenter scoring 2 in the first, but they didn't let up. And this season, typically that first period has been a little bit of a, you know, kind of get used to the other team, kind of figure out what the weaknesses are and then attack in the second and third. And we've seen their point totals definitely go up in the second and third. And that's what we saw again here today is, or on Saturday was, sorry, going back to Thursday. On Thursday was, you know, they scored 2 in the first, but they just kept attacking, and they got another 3 in the third, in the second, and another 3 in the third. So, yeah, they, an all-around great game and a complete effort for the Pride on Thursday.
So we know Boston makes it to the Isabel Cup Finals. Let's talk about Connecticut. This is the end of their season. A couple of things I wanted to ask you. Were you surprised, you know, 3-0 – maybe not 3-0, maybe let's say 5-1, that Nicole Stock wasn't pulled?
Yeah, I think so, but I also think that the coach has been very reluctant since he went from Lundberg to Stock to pull Stock, and I think that he's kind of put a lot of stock in Stock, and, you know, I think it is what it is. I think the Whale are going to live and die by what Stock does for them, unfortunately. So, you know, I don't see it as a big upset or a big change, but yeah, when you get to 8 goals, it's a little bit of a shock that she didn't get pulled.
So in this matchup, we saw Brittany Yaw get the start for the Pride. You've been pretty adamant that Brittany Yaw is one of the best goaltenders in the league. In this game, she makes 24 stops on 26 shots. Connecticut just didn't have an opportunity in this matchup. So we see Boston advance into the Isabel Cup Championship. Now on the opposite end, we have the Battle of New York with the Buffalo Buttes visiting the New York Visitors. And now this is interesting. The battle for New York, but in Newark, New Jersey, Kyle.
New York sometimes likes to mix it up a little bit with their teams and kind of pretend that New Jersey is part of New York. So,
okay. All right. Fair enough. So in this matchup, we saw Buffalo take a 2-0 lead. Were you a little surprised with that? Did you think that New York kind of came out flat?
Definitely. I mean, we talked about this the night before when we were leaving the Pride game. You know, we really felt that the Riveters would have a handle on this game and offensively that they would be able to really just outshoot the Buttes. But, you know, they may have outshot them, but they certainly didn't outscore them.
Yeah, Kyle. In that first period, Megan Bozek gives them a 1-0 lead. It's about with 5 minutes left remaining in the first period. At that point, New York's out shooting Buffalo, I think 9-3, and they finished the first period 11-3. So you mentioned that the shots were there for New York. They outshot Buffalo 36-12 in the matchup. But you know, when Tatiana Rafter scored that goal in the second period, it was a 2-1 game. Did you feel the tide turn there, or were you more like, hey, Buffalo's still doing a good job defensively?
No, I thought it would be the start of something else. You know, I thought that the Riveters just needed to kind of get in gear, and once they kind of broke through the mold, I thought they might be able to punch home a couple more and make it a, you know, and take the lead on the Buttes. But there was no I don't want to say sense of urgency, but you know, there wasn't anything that I felt that the Riveters changed to try to get a better outcome. I felt like they kept doing the same thing. And, you know, Amanda Levier that night was just unbelievable for the Buttes.
Were you actually surprised to see Levier in that instead of McLaughlin?
A little bit, because it was coming down to the last at least game or last two games of McLaughlin's career, and I thought she would have gotten the opportunity to go in the semifinal simply because of that. So it was a little shocking, and I don't know what would have happened if, say, you know, the Riveters took a lead, if the coach would have swapped her in to kind of end the game. But yeah, I was a little surprised to see Levier go on this, but not surprisingly that they have switched quite a bit this year, and they do have pretty similar stats, and they do have pretty similar minutes on the ice this year. So,
yeah, and part of that, Kyle, I think you mentioned it, having that split, and we'll talk about Buffalo in the finals after they won this game. But there's a couple things I want to talk about in this game against New York. Emily Janiga, who's had a phenomenal rookie campaign, and even Haley Skamura, they were the catalyst in this game for Buffalo, and two young players. So what were your thoughts on that? And then I want your thoughts specifically on Haley Skamura.
Well, that's where I was going to go. I mean, I think this is probably, you know, one of those game-changing pickups that, you know, it's clear. I don't know if it was all talent, or if she just comes in, Haley comes in with a great attitude that just kind of lifted the Buttes. But there was certainly a new sense of drive for the Buttes once Skamura got added to this lineup. And she quickly became a huge part of this team and scored multiple either points or goals in her first two playoff games.
Yeah, and in her first three career games, she scored a goal. And here she is in this game. I think she gets two assists and a goal. So she's all over it, Kyle. And part of, you know, I was able to watch Haley at Northeastern play against BC the last couple of years, and she's a great athlete. She's a phenomenal player. She made Northeastern that much better when Kendall Coyne was there as well. So speaking about that, you know, speaking about this team, It was a lot different going into the final, and let's move into that final. So you've got Boston, 16-1 on the year. You have Buffalo, who has six wins on the year alone, and three of those came against New York, and three of those came against Connecticut in the regular season. They haven't beat Boston since they won in overtime when we were there back in January of 2016. So what were your thoughts going into this matchup?
Well, let me start with my thoughts heading into the matchup. My thoughts heading into the matchup was that this was going to be a Pride blowout, and that they were going to score, at least six goals. And this wasn't going to be much of a game after the first or maybe some of the second period. And that this was just going to be smooth sailing, and it was going to be a great opportunity for a lot of Boston fans to see the Boston Pride take home the second Isabel Cup.
All right, so even our Twitter poll that we put out before the game, 59% of our fans said that Boston was going to win by three or more goals. 59%, Kyle.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of people going for Boston. So how big of a game was this for Buffalo to come in, especially after losing last year's Isabel Cup? How big of a game was this for them going in and getting the quick start? They jumped out to a 1-0 lead and then to a 2-0 lead.
Well, let's just talk about all the different storylines here. This was really just such a beautiful night, all around. And, you know, you had somebody like Harrison Brown. You had Breann McLaughlin, who were finishing their career one way or another Sunday night against the Boston Pride in the Isabel Cup. You also had that this was a rematch of the year before. You also had Kareen Bowie, who had just played for the Boston Pride last year and won the Isabel Cup against these Buttes. And now she gets in the offseason moved to Buffalo and now plays for Buffalo. You had a team that was 6-10-1, a team that shouldn't be in this game, that should have lost to New York in the semifinals. You have a team that has just such a great following out in Buffalo, but really has had the least amount of talk of any of these NWHL teams. And they come in, and as you said, a minute and 44 into this game, all of a sudden they're up 1-0. And I looked around the press box, and I looked around down at the Boston fans, and you could just see that there was a stunned look on everybody's face. A minute 44 into this game, the Buttes had already scored a goal, which, you know, I think a lot of fans thought wasn't going to happen that night, or if it did, it was going to be a garbage goal late in the game.
So you mentioned it. At 1:44 into the matchup, Buffalo has a 1-0 lead. Boston continues to apply pressure. They continue to shoot the puck on Brian McLaughlin, but nothing's going through, Kyle. And by the end of the first, midway through the first, Emily Janiga, who just scored in the semifinals 2 goals, she scores again. She doubles the lead for Buffalo. So they take a 1-0 lead into the intermission. In the second, the aforementioned Corinne Bowie, who was formerly with the Boston Pride, she makes it 3-0 midway through the second period. Now, what are you seeing with the fans? Now, what's the reaction? What's the atmosphere like at the Songhai Center?
So actually, it was 2-0 heading into the intermission. And, you know, you just saw at the intermission, again, just this kind of stunned, like, okay, it's still, you know, just 2 goals. The Pride can come back from that after one period. It's only 20 minutes. No big deal. They normally start a little slow. As we head into that third period, you just see chance after chance after chance where the puck falls in front of McLaughlin and the Pride player just can't get a stick on it to put it in. Or it comes off of McLaughlin's pads and the Pride player gets I thought the Buttes played great defense on the night, and the Buttes player was there to defend it as well. You saw blasts from Blake Bolden with the 87-mile-per-hour slap shot. You saw Casey Bellamy, Hillary Knight taking hard, hard shots, and every single one of them, McLaughlin just gobbled right up. And in fact, I'll say that our very own Erica Ayala fell off of her chair when the third goal was scored for the Buttes. That's how important and that's how shocking it was for the Buttes to be up 3-0 halfway through the second period.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, man. So at this point, Kyle, you know, fans all over the world who are Boston fans are like, all right, well, this is a potent offense. You know, no deficit is too big. Brittany Yacht gets replaced for Lauren Sobotnik. But the comeback didn't happen. And as a Boston fan, you're sitting there like, all right, well, 2-0 is a good deficit. We can make up 2-0. But if this thing might go to 3-0, you're kind of worried. And like I said, Boston's a team that they've scored 3 goals in a matter of 5 minutes. It's very doable. But it didn't happen in this game. And was that credit to Buffalo's defense?
And Brian McLaughlin. I mean, here you're absolutely right. And the Pride have come back from 3-goal deficits, I believe, twice this year. And you just know that it wasn't too far to go with 20 minutes left to play. But, you know, the sense was that they really needed to put something on in the first 2 minutes and kind of start to make that chip away. Because if you could get one in the first 2 minutes, now you have 18 minutes left to score two, which, again, as you said, little by little, they could have done that. But when you see, again, you have Brian McLaughlin just standing on her head all night long. And I will say, I think she only got crossbar help once. I think everything else was a pretty solid save by her or the defense. I don't think that there was a lot of, you know, that got by her and it went off the post. So she was just unbelievable. I mean, you stopped 60 shots in a game, not let alone your last game, let alone the championship. It's unbelievable. And she did all of it in one game.
Told you the Boston Pride would outshoot a team 47-3 in the last 2 periods of a game and still lose.
I tell you, you're crazy. I'd tell you that there is no way that they shot 47 times and scored 2 goals.
Well, that's exactly what Buffalo did. Buffalo did not get a single shot on net in that third period. They had 14 shots total, 11 in the first, 3 in the second. You mentioned it, Kyle. 60 saves for Breanne McLaughlin. She earned the NWHL Isabel Cup MVP with 60 saves, but 62 shots for Boston and just 2 goals, Kyle. I mean, how?
2 words. Breanne McLaughlin.
And well said. I mean, you know what the great thing is, Kyle, is last year she talked about it. She talked about how she felt last year, and she said that she considered retiring after last year and decided that, you know, one more year. And it's always like that, isn't it, Kyle? Isn't it always a storybook ending? Hey, one more year, and then I'll hang it up. And, you know, so most of the greats do it that way. So props to Breanne McLaughlin, who went out a champion, and Harrison Brown as well, well-deserved championship for him as well.
Yeah, I think it was great. You know, when she made the decision that this was going to be it, she didn't know, you know, how it was going to play out. But certainly this is a great ending for her and for Harrison and, you know, and the Buffalo Buttes. It's a great, you know, it's a great revenge game from last year. And, you know, they weren't too boastful about it afterwards. They were just happy for each other. They were happy that they played great for their teammates. They were proud of the teamwork, and they were proud of how they stuck together and how they overcame this thing that nobody thought could happen.
Well, and just to highlight how improbable the run was, is they were a game away from playing Boston in the first round. And who knows, if Connecticut beats Buffalo, maybe it's Buffalo who loses 8-2 in the first round, and Connecticut who's hoisting a championship right now, or even New York, if New York plays a different opponent. So there's a lot of things that can go into it. But thinking about what Buffalo was able to do, winning that last game of the season, knowing what was on the line, and then, you know, beating the number 2 seed for a second consecutive year, and then taking down the 16-1 Boston Pride to win the championship, 17-1 if you count their playoff win. An incredible feat for Buffalo. Congratulations to Buffalo Buttes, their fans, their organization, all the players and everybody involved there. Boston, unfortunate loss, but we know next year is going to look a lot different for this league, Kyle. So before we move on to some NCAA hockey, let's talk a little bit about what we're looking forward to with the NWHL, knowing that we might be, at this point we don't know, but possibly we'll be losing some national team player.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge question mark right now, and unfortunately we don't have an answer to that because of what's going on with the national team players. And currently they are down in some of them anyways are down in Philadelphia and working on negotiations with the U.S. national committee. But yeah, it could be a huge game changer next year, whether they do or whether they don't leave to go play in the Olympics, because you look at really at both of these teams, but obviously you look at the Pride and how many players that they have that they're going to lose if that happens. But I do think that there still is a strong core there. You know, we'll see more players come out of the NCAAs this year and join each of the teams as well. I'm very excited to see what does happen if the U.S. national team does go, because I think players, especially some of these rookies, the Mie Dentches of the world, you know, that came onto the scene this year and had such just a great start to the season. You know, if they get their opportunity to really thrive next year, I think it's going to be great for them, and I think it's going to be great for the league.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, a bunch of great athletes coming up from the NCAA ranks to the professional ranks. So a lot to look forward to there. And big shout out to ABC News for putting on a live stream of this matchup, and the NWHL for working out that partnership to get fans access to the game who couldn't make it out to the Songhees Center. So big props there. All right, Kyle, anything else before we wrap up this NWHL talk?
Wow. That's all I have to say. Wow. I mean, seriously, though. When you think about some of the hugest upsets of all time, this has to rank up there. And the things that had to happen for it to happen, as you mentioned, you know, this, we might not even be talking about this if we were playing this when it was supposed to be played at the end of April, when it was a three-game championship, you know. But because of the change in schedule, because they shortened the season, they shortened the playoffs, you know, making this a one-game playoff allows for something that like this to happen. And as you said, the way that Buffalo beat Connecticut on the last day, the way that they beat the Riveters, who they probably shouldn't have, and then to go out and beat the Pride the way that they definitely shouldn't have. You know, it's just an unbelievable story, and I really hope that there is some follow-up on this and some way to, you know, kind of keep it in our memory bank, of whether it's, you know, a documentary of it or something to that effect, because this was such an amazing run and from such an amazing team and such an amazing set of players that I hope that we don't forget just how incredible this last week has been.
Absolutely. We'll make sure to keep note for our MyW Sports Top Moments of the Year special that we love to do every year. So I'm excited for that, Kyle. We've had a lot of great moments, and it's only March. So there's a lot to look forward to, but even more to appreciate from this past year. And as you mentioned, I think a lot of people should take more notice about what Buffalo accomplished and what these players specifically. I mean, I think you can take any player on that roster, and there's an inspirational story just waiting to be written. Excuse me, written, talked about, a feature to be done. I mean, you think at Breanne McLaughlin, you think about Emily Falzer. There's just so many people on that roster that have significant stories that are just amazing, and it's a true testament to what that team was able to do coming together at the end of the season to make the run that they did. So again, big shout out to Buffalo and the Buffalo Buttes. You talked about the NCAA players coming up. Can we skip? Do you mind skipping this segment? Could we just like fast forward this segment?
No, we can't skip it. This was an unbelievable weekend for NCAA hockey as well. We have to talk about it.
Do we have to?
We have to. Let's start with number one Wisconsin. Number one Wisconsin in the semifinals took on Boston College, and this was an unbelievable game. Both teams were tied 0-0. Until there was 16.7 seconds left in the game, and Melissa Chanel got the game-winning goal for the Wisconsin Badgers to send them to the national championship and send Boston College back to Boston.
Oh, you just had to throw BC in there, huh? Oh, Kyle, I'm still not over it. I couldn't skip one of the
semifinals.
Yeah, well, we could have pretended it just didn't happen and said Wisconsin just won and that's it. Yeah, so, you know, I still can't process this. I mean, this was, you know, thinking about some of the greatest games I've ever seen, just ever. Yankees, Red Sox, 0-3, where Aaron Boone launches a home run. You know, I think about that moment specifically a lot. And especially after last year with Boston College losing in the national championship to Minnesota. I think this one was worse, Kyle. I think this one hurt more over anything, over all those memories of me as a kid. And now this one was tough because I think, you know, we've talked about it on air, off air, this Boston College team, they were resilient. You know, they suffered through so much adversity this year, whether it was suspensions, you know, players leaving campus or leaving school because of personal issues, injuries, whatever it was, they responded. And they did it with a positive attitude. They believed in each other. So it's 16.7. Is that what 16.7? You want to get real specific?
Yeah.
Okay. 16.7 seconds away from overtime. My heart was ripped out of my body. And I had no idea how to process this pain. So I will tell you this. I think Katie Burt made a statement. I think Anne Renee is a great goaltender, but also remember that what I just said before that. And I think Wisconsin really put on a show. I think BC and Wisconsin really put on a show. Both teams did not get a goal on the power play. It was a true testament to how great defensively these two teams were. And it was very different from the other semifinal we saw.
Absolutely. And again, when you have a great defensive matchup like this, and it's 0-0, and you know every bouncing puck, every defenseman's move could change the outcome of that game. And you know it's the small things that you never know what it could be. But you know, unfortunately, on this day, unfortunately for BC, fortunately for Wisconsin. You know, the one puck that just happened to slide by Katie Burt was all it took, you know, and you're right. She had an unbelievable performance. But unfortunately, you know, the win is not in the Boston College favor in this game.
And Kyle, I'll say this. I mean, you talked about it. This matchup had a lot of defensive storylines, a lot of great goaltenders. And when you think about the matchup itself, I mean, Anne Renee came in playing phenomenal, and she rode that hot streak into this matchup, and to shut out a BC team, I'll tell you now, I can't remember the last time Boston College was shut out. It's a very long time ago. So that's something right there as well, is just showing you how good Wisconsin was going into the final. You know, BC is no slouch, and to see what this team was able to do. And you mentioned the one bounce, both Chanel and Burt said they didn't see the puck. Neither of them saw where the puck went. It just went in. And that's all it takes in a tough game like that.
Well, and look, here you have the Petty Cavs winner and Anne Renee Desbiens, and you have Katie Burt, who's an unbelievable goaltender in her own right and only a junior. And you don't make it into the Frozen Four without a great goaltender. I mean, we're going to talk about two more in the other semifinal, but you know, great goaltending is what gets you to this place, you know, and what you do offensively is going to be the difference in the game.
Absolutely. And that, like you said, that bounce went on the side of the Badgers. So they go into the Frozen Four final in St. Charles, Missouri at the Family Arena. Now, before we go into semifinal two, a lot of talk and a lot of stoppage on the ice because of the ice conditions. Kyle, and I was not a big fan of this national championship being in St. Charles, just because there really aren't any NCAA institutions around there, minus Lindenwood, who hosted it. So what were your thoughts about the ice condition going into this matchup, or what you saw from the game?
It's tough. I hate to think that, you know, the ice condition can change the game, but it certainly can. You know, we can see players, you know, not get as good of a footing. We can see the puck get an extra bounce. You know, it's the ice conditions can be a huge deal, and something as small as I saw the other after the game, somebody had a picture of one of the goaltenders, and behind the goaltender you could see a puddle of water behind them, behind the goal. You know, if the puck goes behind that and stops, now you're changing the way that the puck is moving. And if, you know, a defender or I should say a forward is able to get to that and, you know, stop and move in the other direction, she may have an advantage over the goalie, you know, just because of something as small as a little extra water on the ice. But it is a big deal. And I agree with you. I find it a little difficult to have it in a place where, you know, there aren't as many schools down there. And also if the ice conditions aren't going to be good enough for the Frozen Four, you know, which is a big deal. I don't know that was the right move for them to play down there.
Yeah, and you know, you saw in New Hampshire last year, and you've seen in whether it's Minnesota or Connecticut, or even out in Wisconsin, there's always big crowds there, and it didn't seem like this was as big of a crowd as it could have been. As you mentioned, these were, you know, some of the best teams in the nation that bring some of the best crowds in the nation, and it just didn't seem like that was available. But let's go into that second semifinal, Kyle. Let's talk about Clarkson in Minnesota. we talked about the first game being a defensive battle. This became an offensive battle, and it was a seesaw affair. You saw one team take the lead, the other team had to respond, and it became more Clarkson doing that. So Genevieve Bannon, she gives Clarkson a 1-0 lead, and then Katie Shipper, she scores to give Minnesota the tie. And we saw that throughout, Kyle. So what were your thoughts about this matchup?
Well, I think you just had two very evenly matched teams and two, again, I'll say two great goaltenders, but you also had two great offenses. And, you know, the greatness, I think, was the seesaw. It was great that, you know, as soon as one would score, the other one would come right back. And that just makes for such awesome hockey. And that's what we got in this game.
Absolutely. Lauren Gable made it 2-1 for Clarkson in that second period. Then Sarah Potomac, she made it 2-2. Savannah Harmon in the third made it 3-2. And then Sophie Skarzinski, she made it 3-3. We're at a tie game. We're winding down in the third period, Kyle. Now I'm sitting here like, oh, maybe we're gonna see another late goal. And that's exactly what we see. 91 seconds left. Ryan McGill from Kaylee Mercer. She puts it home to beat Sydney Peters and give Clarkson a 4-3 lead. Now, we were anticipating Minnesota to tie it, but did they just run out of time, Kyle?
Yeah. And look, it's funny how these things happen, but I think it happens more often than you think, is whatever you saw in one semifinal, you're going to see in the other. And we saw two – I'll still say 90 seconds is a pretty late goal comparatively to the whole game. Last year we saw two overtimes in the semifinals. So, you know, this year it didn't go to overtime, but it came right down to the wire in both games, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Both games going to overtime last year, and then this, you know, these games going into, you know, less than 91 seconds in both games decided the winner in both. So that's a great comparison. And so now we have Clarkson, Shea Tiley. Now you talked about Tiley last year in your goaltender ranking. I had told you I wasn't really high on Tiley. But, man, she made 28 saves, and she showed me something in this matchup, Kyle, and I think she showed a lot of people in the nation because she's also a junior.
Well, I told you, don't sleep on Shea Tiley. I had her as my number three goaltender last year, and unfortunately, you know, BC was just better in the semifinal last year and knocked them out a little earlier. But yeah, Shea Tiley is a great goaltender that has a ton of potential. And I know that she's getting a lot of looks at the national level as well.
Absolutely. And in this matchup, just one penalty, a very clean game, 7 goals in this matchup, just one power play opportunity, and that went to Clarkson. So congratulations to Clarkson for moving on and defeating a powerhouse like Minnesota. They knock off the Golden Gophers, the defending champs. Now, the Golden Knights take on the Badgers in the championship, Kyle. We go through a scoreless first period, and, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, this is a goaltender battle. Tiley, Debien, we're probably going to see another one-goal game. That quickly shifts in the second period, does it not?
Yeah, I don't know what happened on Sunday, but the hockey gods, like, decided to just everything over O to the other side O. I mean, here we are waiting for, you know, Desbien and the Wisconsin Badgers to win and to shut down Clarkson, and they are able to just continue to score on Desbien and really put this game away pretty early for Clarkson.
Yeah, you know, so that's, for me, I think that's the incredible thing, is in a defensive game that we saw in the first, You thought, you know, hey, any team that gets the first goal, if they can pack it in and just play defensively, this might be a 1-0 game. And that's basically what it was. You see Kaylee Mercer with 3:04 remaining in the third period make it 2-0. At that point, Kyle, do you think it's in the books, or do you still see Wisconsin making a comeback?
Well, I was worried. To start the year, that the Wisconsin offense was going to be what was going to hinder them. And then they proved me wrong all year long until they get to the Frozen Four and they score one goal with 16.7 seconds remaining in the semifinal to squeak by a very good BC team. And then they don't score in this game either. And unfortunately it was the, you know, not for lack of effort, but just lack of execution, that Wisconsin, you know, their offense just let them down in this game.
Now, for all the talk of Ty Lee, she made 41 saves in this matchup to shut down the number one ranked Badgers. I want to talk a little bit about Kaylee Mercer. 2 goals and 3 assists in the Frozen Four. She was a Patty Kaz Award finalist. Was this sort of her, like, hey, I can beat your Patty Kaz Award winner?
Ooh. I mean, I just think she's a hard-fought player anyways. I think she's somebody that is going to have a great career in the professional leagues in the very near future. I don't know that she was going out there to try to beat Daisy Behrens, but I think she was going out there to try to help Clarkson win the national championship. So I don't know that it was specifically for that, but certainly, you know, there is a great drive in her.
All right. Well, congratulations to Clarkson on winning their second national championship in program history. They defeat Minnesota a couple years ago. They defeat Wisconsin here on Sunday. So an incredible feat for Clarkson, a program that's definitely made its name in the national headlines and has put itself up with Wisconsin, Minnesota, Boston College, and Minnesota Duluth for those teams that you know, you want to be careful when you're playing in the Frozen Four or in any game this season upcoming. So, again, congratulations to Clarkson. Anything on NCAA hockey, Kyle? We're going to see a lot of these seniors join us next year in CWHL and NWHL action. But any final thoughts on the hockey season?
No, I think this was a great season. It was great to see the ECAC really put a name out there for themselves again. And it's interesting to see, you know, where the seniors are going to end up next year and how many are going to go to the NW or to the CW. And specifically if the U.S. Olympians are not playing and, you know, there's an opportunity for more of these players to be playing in the NWHL, I think that would be a great thing.
Absolutely. So very well said. Let's wrap up hockey talk and move from NCAA hockey to NCAA basketball. Currently, we have eight games remaining before we're officially into the Sweet 16. So 8 games going on this evening into later on this night. Tonight, Bacal, we have 8 teams that already stamped their ticket in. We had a really, really incredible start. No real huge upsets. I'm going to tell you now, Kyle, I underestimated the 12-5 upsets this year. Did not see Quinnipiac making that kind of run or pulling off that kind of win. But anything that surprised you in the first and second round?
Oh, boy. Not really. I mean, I think there's always going to be upsets. But the question is, who's going to remain at the end? Who's going to still be there when we're talking about the 8 or the final 4? You know, and I think when I think about who those teams are that I expected to be there, I still see all of the names that I really thought would win. I thought they would be there. So I'm not overly surprised yet, but the best is yet to come.
So let's talk about the round of 32. We had number 3 Maryland advance easily against number 6 West Virginia. Number 2 Mississippi State demolished DePaul. This matchup wasn't close. It was 92-71. DePaul made it closer towards the end. South Carolina survives against Arizona State. That was a 71-68 game. We'll talk about that one in a second. Florida State advanced 77-55 against Missouri. Oregon State advanced 64-52 against Creighton. Let's move over to the Lexington region. Notre Dame advanced 88-82. I want to talk about this one as well. That was against Purdue. And Texas as well had a pretty close game against number 6 NC State. That was 84-80, the final in that matchup. And number 5 Ohio State defeats number 4 Kentucky 82-68 to advance into the Sweet 16. We'll get you some games that are going on right now in just a moment. But Kyle, a couple of games that I want to talk about. Let's first talk about South Carolina against Arizona State, 71-68. A big comeback for South Carolina at the end of the fourth to get this game close. Arizona State had a chance. They just kind of self-destructed at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to remember that a win is a win, and sometimes – it's by a lot, and sometimes it's by a little. But a win is a win is a win. And, you know, this one was close. And I saw some people on Twitter saying that, you know, because this was so close, South Carolina is done, or that, you know, because it was so close, this other team should have made the tournament. And I'm sorry. Like, they still won. I know that it was much closer than it should have been. But, you know, withstanding an injury and still winning over a pretty good Arizona State team. Let's not forget, you know, I really like the Pac-12 this year, and I really think that there are a lot of very good teams in that Pac-12 that could continue to make upsets and continue to make runs towards the Final Four again this year.
Absolutely. And speaking of the Pac-12, you have a lot of great teams in that conference this year who've made you know, quite a name for themselves in the tournament. We saw Oregon State have a great run last year. They defeat Creighton by 12. Creighton kind of surprised me in this matchup. They came out guns blazing, and I think they surprised Oregon State. Are there any surprises for you coming up, or that you saw in the first couple of games?
Well, I want to mention the one that's going on right now. I think, you know, the Oregon Duke battle with Oregon up right now. I think that's a big one that could really send shockwaves. Again, another Pac-12 team doing their part. And I think Tennessee right now being down, we got 7 minutes left in the fourth, and they're down 7 as well. That could be a huge loss for Tennessee as well.
Yeah. When you think about that Tennessee team, I think they're interesting because I have them in one bracket going pretty far. You know, and it's the same with all of these teams. It's who shows up. So you see this team down a couple of, you know, was it 7 with 7 minutes remaining. We saw Texas A&M come back from 21 points down in the first round to sort of shock Penn. Penn was cruising.
Absolutely.
In this game. So what was that like, Kyle? I mean, when you're taking that as a microcosm of what the tournament is supposed to be, a team like Tennessee trying to make a big run, they're scoreless in the fourth right now.
Well, I mean, again, you're starting to talk about, in some way or another, the best, you know, 16 to 30 teams in all of college basketball. And you know what? You can't ever slow down against any of these teams, because if you let off the gas pedal, they're just going to come storming back, like you said, in that one game there, you know, down 21, and they come back, and that was just unbelievable. And you see it time and time again. It's never over until that final horn sounds, whether it's at the end of regulation or whether it's at the end of overtime.
Absolutely. So number 5, Texas A&M will take on UCLA tonight. Some other games to look forward to. You mentioned the Duke-Oregon game. Right now, Kansas State losing to Stanford. So number 2 Stanford looking well on their way to advance. I think that game probably just went final. It was 67-48 last time we checked. Number 12, Quinnipiac against number 4 Miami. Kyle, your thoughts? You think Quinnipiac can keep the run going?
Oh, I don't know. The Miami team is very tough. This could be a tough one for a team like Quinnipiac. So I expected Miami to still be here and still win against the 5 seed in this round anyways. So I think I'd still stick with Miami here anyways.
Another game I want to talk about, Cal and Baylor. Baylor just put up 119 points against Texas Southern. I mean, 119 points. The final score was 119-30, Kyle. Is Cal going to put up a fight in this matchup?
Well, again, I mean, they play in that Pac-12. They've faced many of these teams that are still in the tournament. You know, they're not a very high scoring offense, but you know, they play a pretty good defense, and you know, I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I still see Baylor moving on in this round.
Did you fill out a bracket, Kyle?
I did.
So you're gonna reveal to our audience who your winner is?
My winner actually was the South Carolina Gamecocks. And unfortunately, I'm a little nervous now with the injury that they got in this past game. I'm curious if they're still going to be able to hang on there. But I look, it comes down to, you know, we're looking now at you know, the Sweet 16, right? And you're looking at, you know, from the Bridgeport, you know, UConn, who's UConn going to face? Well, you know, it could be an early UCLA game. It could be a Maryland game. Again, both of those are tough matchups. And to do those on multiple nights in a row, you know, or you get a day off, but still, that's a lot to ask. And you know, you look down at the Oklahoma City region, you know, same thing with the Baylor. Baylor's a great team. I really like what they have, but you've got a Washington, you've got a, you know, Tennessee, if they can come back here, that you'd have to go through both of those in twice in 3 nights. In the Stockton region, you know, South Carolina, like I said, I like them, but, you know, I also see Florida State is a very, very good team that could upset them. And down in Lexington, you know, Notre Dame has had a couple of close ones already. And you know, I see a team like Texas or a team like Ohio State that's continuing to do what they, you know, have done all year, which is score in bunches. It could be tough for Notre Dame as well if you see them back-to-back.
Absolutely. Notre Dame also had a big injury last night, losing Breonna Turner. So that's, like you mentioned, Alicia Gray is probably going to miss the rest of the season. And I think she joins Coates as well. I think it's Elena Coates, who was ruled out before the tournament for South Carolina. So a lot of injuries happening here for some of the number one seeds. But we'll see. I mean, last night, number nine Purdue took Notre Dame into overtime. And that was an incredible game, but somehow the Irish found a way to win. That final's 88-82. So anything can happen in the tournament, Kyle.
That's right. That's right.
Big matchup if it happens, UConn Maryland. Who did you have advancing there?
Well, UConn Maryland would be the final out of that region. If Duke doesn't come back, they're really going to screw me over. Because I actually had Duke losing to Connecticut there.
Okay, I'm with you on that one. I had two brackets. I had one bracket that had Maryland beating Connecticut and winning the national championship, and then I had the other one where I didn't want them to play Maryland, so I had Duke beat Maryland and then Connecticut beat Duke. So that's how my logistics worked on that one. All right, I love it. Bracketology, bracket time. I love it. It's all great stuff. So we'll keep you updated on scores here. I think with 1 minute left, it's 60 or 45 seconds left. It's 67-60 Oregon over Duke right now in the fourth, and Tennessee making it interesting, trailing by 8 now, 59-51 with 4:51 remaining. So if you're listening live, go catch those games right now as we wrap up here on MyW Sports. Kyle, anything on basketball before we move on?
No, I'm just pumped to see the rest of this tournament finish out.
Absolutely. So, again, you can watch all the games on ESPN's family of networks. You can watch them all live on ESPN3.com. So go watch those games. A lot of great athletes playing right now. And who knows, maybe you'll witness something that you never thought you'll see, like we did with Boston and Buffalo this weekend. So
that's right.
A lot. All right, Kyle, let's talk about some soccer or some football. NWSL preseason has kicked off. You know, the Breakers have a preseason schedule. All the teams are playing either colleges or AAU programs or those sorts of teams. So any big news on your end with the NWSL? Or what are you looking forward to? The season's, you know, right around the corner.
Man, you know what? It's tough because, you know, being in the Boston area, I was kind of hoping for more out of the Breakers this year and haven't really seen too much in the off season that tells me that they're, you know, moving in the right direction and improving the team that they had from last year. So it's a little bit of an unfortunate scenario there. I'm curious to see the new Western New York Flash, the new now, what are we calling them? The Carolina
Courage.
Courage, yeah. You know, I'm curious to see how it transfers down to the Carolinas, because they had, in my opinion, a great fan base up in Western New York, and it's just unfortunate that that Western New York, after winning the title, got moved. So I'm curious to see how the Courage start off this year.
Absolutely. I think my team, and I know EA would love this, but it's Sky Blue. I think they made a lot of great acquisitions this offseason, made a lot of great picks in the draft. So I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch going into this season. I think they're going to be fun. So can't wait to catch a Breakers Sky Blue game later on this season. All right, so from football, we go to IWFL, WSA, and USWFL news. If you haven't checked it out already, or if you haven't checked it or listened to it, I should say, 4-point stance by Fox Sports down in Hopewell. They do a good podcast on some of the women's football leagues. Check that out. It's Ashley Edmondson with our partners down there. So we just want to shout her out. But Cal, the football season is about 2 weeks away here in Boston. I know some teams get started a little earlier, so just under 2 weeks for them. A lot of things to look forward to. What are you thinking for this football season?
Well, I think the new WFA, I think with all the teams that have come over to the WFA, I think is going to be very interesting. I think it's going to be a big season specifically for the Boston Renegades. They had such a great start to last year and unfortunately lost the quarterback there for the remainder of the season, late in the season. But if they can come back healthy and, I think they're really going to give the DC Divas a run for their money this year.
Yeah, I think they played DC twice this year, so that's going to be some fun matchups between Boston and DC. But I just want to shout out Boston. They've been really supportive. I tweeted out the other day that, Boston Boston hockey has really hurt me recently, with Boston College losing to Wisconsin and then the Pride losing to Buffalo. I felt, I had to share my thoughts, and the Renegades were there to provide some inspirational words, and big shout out to the Boston Renegades for that. Can't wait to cover the team this season. So I think you're right. I also think that there are going to be some big moves this season. I think we're going to see some other teams make a name for themselves in their divisions. So I think the playoffs this year are going to be really fun to watch, Kyle.
Well, and let me say this too. It doesn't matter where you live. Please go look at WFAfootball.net and look to see if there's a team around you, because there are so many more teams now, not only in the WFA, but in all of the football leagues that need your support and would love your fan support as well at the games, cheering them on or just taking in the scene. We're looking at, as you said, just a couple weeks away from, and I'm only looking at the WFA format, 31 games to be played the weekend of April 1st. I mean, that's unbelievable. And a lot of these teams, like I said, whether they've moved or not, some are brand new. And so there's a lot more teams out there to go see and go support. So look it up, check it out, and go support women's football.
Absolutely. And just on that note as well, if you are interested in covering any of these teams from IW Sports, please reach out to us, mywsports@gmail.com, or send us a direct message on social media. Love to grow our coverage wherever you are, whether it's California, Texas, Oregon. There are teams everywhere. So definitely go look, as Kyle said. And if you're interested in whether you're a fan or even becoming part of the media and joining MyW Sports' great mission, definitely reach out to us. We would love to talk some more. So just figured I'd throw that out there, Kyle. So let's move on to some tennis. The BNP Paribas Open, Elina Vesnina, she wins in three sets after losing the first set in a tiebreaker. She takes the second 7-5 and the third 6-4. It's her third career singles victory, first in a while, but she's won two doubles titles there at Indian Wells. She adds a third, this time a singles championship. Quick headline from the NPF, National Pro Fast Pitch Softball News, the league, and 2XU, which is 2XU, partner in a three-year deal. This is an Australian-based compression apparel company, so it's a three-year partnership with the Australian-based company. Big news there, Kyle, especially with the Australian national team partnership.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is a great opportunity to grow some sponsorships and grow you get some extra cash for the league that hopefully this could lead to either more teams, more games, more television rights for the NPF. All of those things take money and take sponsorships. And so I think this is a great thing, and obviously came out of, you know, allowing the Australian players to play for Chicago this year.
Absolutely. Last big headline was the Bank of Hope Founders Cup in the LPGA. This tournament this weekend was won by Anna Norquist. She won the tournament, beating Ariana Jutanegarn and three others who were tied for second place. Jutanegarn finishes second. Three Americans finished in the top 10. A lot to look forward to in the LPGA tournament as the season progresses. Kyle, did we miss anything this segment?
On ladies golf or anything?
On anything.
I just want to throw out there as well, we're starting to wrap up alpine skiing. Our favorite short tracker, anyways, Michaela Schifrin, still leading the overall World Cup results right now. So we're closing in on finishing that up, and she is leading the pack quite handedly right now. So, you know, hopefully we'll know in the next couple of days.
All right. So keep track of that on MyW Sports, at MyW Sports on Twitter, or follow along at MyWSports.com. Again, follow us on social media at MyW Sports is bringing you Motivational Monday, Top Player Tuesday, Women in History Wednesday, Throwback Thursday, and Friday Favorites. If you have any ideas for these days on social media, please let us know or visit us on MyWSports.com. You could always make a donation at GoFundMe.com/MyWSports. For Kyle Westcott, I'm Luis Sanchez. Always appreciate you joining us wherever you are and however you are. Have a great rest of the week. And again, thank you for joining us here on MyW Sports Sports Monday.